bold and raw perspectives of local politics. Important information which impacts our community, nation, and world. Exposing truth, transparency, and getting to the heart of relevant issues that you just won't see in the clickbait media. And always keeping it real. It's the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
But I won't back down.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast. I am so excited about today's episode. In fact, as that intro was coming in, you know, talking about politics, we're actually taking a break from politics today and focusing more on the exposing truth part of what I love doing on this podcast and bringing on someone who is so phenomenal. I have with me here via Zoom Dr. Jeff O'Driscoll. Now, Jeff is not only a longtime emergency medicine physician, but he is also a spiritual mentor. He is an award-winning author, a public speaker, you name it. I feel like Jeff O'Driscoll does it. And when I have read his books, and we're going to get into some of his books today because he has a new book that just came out, actually, that I just read called Zen's Garden. But his other book, and he has many books, but his other book where I first actually was introduced to Jeff, his book called Not Yet, which is also a phenomenal book. So first of all, Dr. Jeff O'Driscoll, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for being willing to come on.
Oh, it's so good to be with you. I've been looking forward to this. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to start maybe with your book, Not Yet. And so I read that book and literally it changed my life. So it's been about 4 years ago now that I was reading that book, and it just spoke truth to my soul. And it was actually while I was reading that book that I felt the presence of my daughter, who at the time was not born yet. And at the time, I thought I was not having any more children. And I knew, you know, I felt the spirit around me and I thought, wow, I have another child. And, you know, I became pregnant with her shortly after that. And that was your book. That was because of that intuition, that spiritual connection I was able to gain through reading your book. So first of all, thank you for that.
Thank you. I don't think I've heard that that experience from you before. I have a lot of women who have experiences similar to that relative to having children, including my own wife, who was literally giving birth to my oldest daughter when she told me, I don't think I want to do this again. And she heard a voice say, no, there's one more. And 2 years later, her younger sister was born. And my wife didn't even tell me about that until years later.
Wow. Yeah. So interesting. And yeah, now my little Dakota, who is going to be 4 years old coming up in July. And yeah, I don't know. Had I not had that experience, it's hard to say if she would be here. So we definitely love having her around. And I love that light, that truth that you bring. And maybe first, let's talk a little bit about what took you from being an emergency medicine physician to a spiritual mentor and healer and author and speaker. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
I had a lot of experiences in the emergency department that science couldn't explain. Sometimes when somebody would pass away, I would see their soul, their essence, their consciousness, whatever you want to call it, leave their body and communicate with them before they left this realm. And I never talked about it all the time I was an emergency physician, but about 6 months after I stopped seeing patients, I woke up one day and something just clicked and I understood it's okay to talk about it now. And when I started to share my experiences, and I wrote my book, Not Yet. Shortly after that, people were asking me about how did this happen? When did this start? Why do you have these experiences? And I didn't have answers to any of those questions because I'd never really contemplated them before. And as I started to think about it, I realized that my experiences began shortly after my older brother was killed in a farm accident when we were kids. And I started to have experiences where I was given some information or knowledge or warning, and the experiences grew over time, and until sometimes I saw the messenger that was delivering the message. And my brother came to me about 20 years after his death, and he said, "You have to go talk to our mother because there's things she's never told you about my death." And as you might imagine, that got my attention. So I went and I sat down with my mother, just the two of us alone one day, and talked about things. And she said, "Before your brother Stan died, I always knew where you were in the house because I could hear you singing. When your brother died, you stopped singing." Mm. And that was the first time I really realized that my brother's death had impacted me in a deeply profound way. And I think that many times the messages I get, and I know that sometimes the messages I get come from my brother. And sometimes I see him and experience his presence, and other times it's just a voice or a message. And so sometimes this happened in the emergency department. For example, one man was involved in a car crash down by Cedar City, and his wife of 10 years and his 14-month-old son were killed in the accident. And he was badly injured and flown to my trauma center in Salt Lake. When I went in to see him in the trauma room, his deceased wife was standing above him in the air, observing his care, and she thanked me profusely for the care he was receiving. And her physical remains, her body, were still 200 miles away. The patient who's talked about this experience, so I'm not divulging anything now, his name's Jeff Olson. He was unconscious then, but a month later when he was awake, he'd had a bunch of surgeries, including the amputation of one leg. We met and talked about things. And when I shared my experience, he became emotional and shared with me how he'd left his body at the scene of the accident before first responders even arrived there. And he'd risen up above the scene of the accident in this brilliant, inexplicable light and met his wife there in the light. And she said, "You have to go back and raise our other son," because their other son in the accident was only minimally injured. And so Jeff and I, Jeff Olson's his name, we're still good friends to this day, nearly 30 years later.
Wow. Yeah, that is so incredible. And I've read Jeff Olson's, some of his books as well, which are also incredible. And I think one thing that I feel really connected to you and your words is I've always been very fascinated with near-death experiences. And I think that stems from, as a child, my grandfather telling me about his near-death experience, where he was in a car accident with his wife, my mom's mom. My mom was also in the car, who was 12 years old at the time. And they were in a car accident, and my grandmother was killed almost instantly. And my grandpa looked over, noticed his wife was deceased, and he just, you know, he kind of gave up and died himself, and explained that light, going into the light, and that warmth and that feeling of that happiness and peace. But then he heard my mom's voice calling for her mother, and he realized that he had to go back, because, you know, to take care of his children. And so he did. But that experience that he shared with me has always really stuck with me. And I've since experienced my own things where, you know, I can remember as a child riding my bike, you know, maybe 6 or 7 years old, downtown St. George, and feeling that same grandmother who I'm named after, her presence and her saying, "Stop." And I stopped, and a car, you know, went by quickly, and I probably would have been hit by that car. And so I'm just always really, really fascinated, because there's so much more to this life than what meets the eye. And I love that you touch on that in your new book as well, which I would love for you to touch on as well, called Zen's Garden. Tell us a little bit about what inspired that book.
I had a lot of these kind of spiritual experiences during my 25 years as an emergency physician. And I wrote about a few of them in the book, Not Yet. But I wrote a novel a few years ago, and that was the first time I'd written fiction. And fiction is an incredibly liberating medium to write in. And it gave me a way of taking a character with whom I had a few things in common and funneling him through some experiences and having some insight into how that character might react. And so the main character is named Solace Murphy. That's an Irish name, and I'm Irish. O'Driscoll's pretty Irish. And Solace is not spiritual at all. He's a by-the-book, left-brained, science-minded guy. And then his adult daughter suddenly passes away. And after she passes away, he starts to have experiences in the emergency department that he just can't explain, but he can't deny them either. And the book kind of follows his journey as he becomes aware that there's things beyond science, things that we don't really understand and can't explain. But what really stunned me about the book was I wrote it and edited it, had it all done a year ago, and then my father's health took a turn for the worse. So I set the book aside. I went and took care of my father for 6 weeks. He passed away last May, and a week after his funeral, my 32-year-old daughter was diagnosed with advanced lung cancer. Mm. Healthy, health-conscious, fit person. She was a neonatal flight nurse, and she lasted only 6 months. She passed away in November. And about halfway through last summer, while I was caring for my daughter, I remembered the book and what happened to Solace's daughter, and my jaw just dropped. I couldn't believe that I had written this before my daughter had even become ill. And Solace's daughter was named Zen. All the time I was writing the book, over a long period of time, I thought it was about Solace's journey. And Solace was in the title of the book, the working title. And a couple days after Rachel passed away, I heard her voice say, "Zen's Garden." And it just struck me. I thought, that's perfect. And that was the first time I understood the book was less about Solace's journey than it was Zen's tutelage and how she was helping her father come to a broader awareness of things. And so I put that title on the manuscript and published it.
I love it. I think that is a perfect title. And maybe this seems strange, but I, not even knowing Rachel, I could feel Rachel in the book. I actually sped read the book. I couldn't put it down over these last couple of days. And it did make me miss the emergency department. I will say that because I loved all of the banter about the ER that I could so relate with. Every character, I'm like, yep, I know someone like that. Yep, I know someone like that. So that part of it was really cool. But also I can feel definitely the influence of Rachel in that book, and how interesting that you had written it before even knowing, you know, how things were going to transpire. I mean, that's definitely, you certainly have a gift to share with the world for sure.
You know, people, if they go to my website and look at my blog posts or on my social media pages, you can scroll back through my posts over the last 6 months. You'll see that I've had some profound experiences with rainbows since my daughter died. And I'm not a rainbow guy. I'm not into butterflies and dragonflies and signs in general. I've always been a bit skeptical about those things, but these rainbows that keep popping up in the most incredible ways, that it makes it hard to not give some credence to the notion that they might come from my daughter. So just before I sent the manuscript off to be published, I figured I should read it one more time. I hadn't read it in a year. And I start reading this chapter where Solace goes into Zen's bedroom for the first time since she died. Her bedroom's been shut up tight since her funeral. And he goes in there and he picks up a bottle of her perfume that he bought for her in Paris. And he sits down in the middle of the floor and he's feeling her presence, which is distinctly unusual for him. And then he looks across the room at the far wall and he sees that the beveled glass windows of her bedroom were casting rainbows across the far wall of her bedroom. And when I read it, I just I wept. I couldn't believe it. I had this feeling like, Jeff, you wrote your own sign and Rachel's honoring it. Mm-hmm. You wrote it 2 years before she died and now she's honoring what you wrote. And it was just shocking to me. And there's another place in the book where Saul's is talking to his wife. And mind you, this is 2 years before anybody knew Rachel was sick. He's talking to his wife about how much he misses his daughter. And he says, God, I love that kid. And I remember the day I wrote that line and I just wept because I felt it. I felt it like Saul's daughter was my own. I guess my soul knew, but I just didn't understand for a while yet into the future.
Wow. I mean, there are so many truths that you share in this book and so many different dynamics. I wrote down just a few quotes that as I was reading it stood out to me. One is, a thousand thunderous whispers proclaimed, you are the light. A shudder swept through him. It seemed too big to accept, too arrogant. Echoes of childhood Sunday school reminded him of the perils of pride and of his nothingness before his creator. He recalled a King James Christ saying, I am the light. In that same instant, however, he felt that same Christ in his Sermon on the Mount telling those who would listen, you are the light. He realized his infinite nature, not from religion, science, or philosophy, but from personal experience. And he knew acknowledging that nature was not pride. Pride, he realized, was refusing to also acknowledge the divine nature in every other soul. Wow, that's profound. There's a lot to unpack there. And one thing that I always love about following your posts is you have such a gift at explaining people's divine nature and that our infinite worth doesn't change based off of choices we make or things that happen to us in this life. That worth is always there for every soul. And maybe you can elaborate on some of your thoughts when you wrote that passage.
Yes, those are profound truths that came to me in a similar way. They came to me in a way that was so powerful. I was in meditation one day, and I was sitting on this beach in the meditation. I walked out of this beautiful forest. In my mind, I was in the Pacific Northwest, up in Washington or Oregon, and I walked out of this beautiful evergreen forest and right out onto the beach, the way it is up there in places. And in my meditation, I went for a swim in the ocean. I love the ocean. I love the marine life. And that when I came back out of the ocean, I was standing on the beach facing west. And I reflexively stretched my arms out to my sides and turned my palms up and tipped my head back. And I experienced these wisps of light coalescing in the air above my palms. And they just formed these orbs of light, but they were more than light. They were like knowledge and power and love and the essence of who we are. And in some ancient way that I knew what to do intuitively, I brought my arms in front of me until my hands touched and the two balls of light merged into one. And then I brought it to my chest and I gently pressed it against my chest until it went inside of me. And then it just exploded and it filled my whole being, every cell with this light. And light is such an inadequate word, but that's the experience I had. And in the midst of that experience, I heard a voice say, you are the light. And that was the first time I realized, oh, it's not figurative. It's literal. That's what we are. That's who we are. And that's what we all are. And we look at each other and we pick each other apart. We judge one another on these little petty, insignificant things instead of recognizing every being around you is divine and filled with light.
Oh, I love that. And in the book, there's a character, and I even texted you while I was in the midst of reading the book saying, I just want to reach through the book and slap this person because she's just obnoxious and she's causing so much grief and unnecessary trouble for the main character. But bringing that around at the end of the book to recognize that even though she was doing these awful things, the main character still forgave and still saw that light in that person. And what a message for all of us in today's day and age, where things have become in some ways very divisive and hateful, and it's very easy to, you know, look at someone and judge them. But at the end of the day, just like you're saying, we all are that light, and how profound to be able to look for that light and find that light in others. So I really appreciated that message in the book.
Some of the influence that led me down that path writing that was an experience I had in the emergency department when I was still practicing medicine. I went into a room one day, I think it was in November. It was cold and snowy, and I walked into this patient room, and here's this gentleman. I think he had on overalls, tattered shoes with holes in them and holes in his socks. He had long hair and an unkempt beard, and he struggled with substance use. And I did what I knew needed to be done and what he knew needed to be done. When you walk around in cold, wet shoes, as you know, working in the emergency department, although less so in St. George than in Salt Lake, it's really hard on your feet. And so I filled a wash basin with warm water and put some soap in it. I sat down at the foot of the gurney with a wash rag. I removed his shoes and took off the last threads of his socks, and I proceeded to wash his feet. And in the process of doing it, everything that was physical or mortal or temporal about this individual was drawn aside, and I saw his soul. I saw who I was, who he was. And I was in the presence of God. I went in there thinking I was going to serve him, and then I realized he was there ministering to me. He was the antithesis of everything the world defines as success, and yet he was divine, and he was teaching me that I was too. And from that day forward, I viewed every soul differently, and I realized that whether you're sitting in the pews at church or in the gutter, the person next to you is always divine, and so are you.
Absolutely. I love that. That's actually one thing that I always enjoyed about working in the emergency department. And I actually didn't mind working holidays either, because holidays actually was traditionally when those people, like you mentioned, who are sometimes experiencing the least of the world and in the hardest of times, naturally sometimes find their way to the emergency departments during holiday seasons. And I actually always enjoyed that no matter what you were there for, no matter what your socioeconomic status was, or, you know, your race or gender, and, you know, on and on, we were simply there to take care of the patient and not discriminate based off of anything else. And I really enjoyed that part of emergency medicine. And I appreciate coming from you as an emergency medicine physician, where that's obviously so science-based. To me, that gives your experiences, your spiritual experiences, almost that much more credibility, because it's like you understand science, but you also understand. And the book Zen's Garden hits on some of these points too, which I think is brilliant, where there's so much more though. I mean, science didn't exist until we knew about certain things, till certain things were invented, correct? So maybe touch on some of that, like science versus some of these alternative spiritual things that maybe people would say, oh, that's not true because you can't see it, you can't prove it, so therefore it must not be true.
Yeah, Solace gets roped into speaking at a fundraiser for the hospital at one point. He doesn't like administrative stuff, and he doesn't like the whole fundraising crap that he's compelled to deal with at times. But he acquiesces to a request from an administrator to speak at this fundraising dinner. And he tells a story, which is actually a true story, about a person in Hawaii, in the Sandwich Islands, as they were called back then in the mid-1800s. And this person drowns in rough seas just off the coast of Lahaina. And they pull his lifeless body out of the ocean. And a person standing nearby has this profoundly spiritual experience where he's directed to put his mouth on the man's lips and blow air into his lungs. And he does it. And they resuscitate this man. And I did a little research. Mouth-to-mouth resuscitation had been talked about in some academic centers in Europe at that time. But nobody on that island in Hawaii had heard of it. It was a purely physical, or excuse me, a purely spiritual experience for that man. So at what point did something so spiritual become mundane and physical? Because now people are resuscitated every day with mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Nobody gives it a second thought. It's kind of like cardiac defibrillators. I was with some friends one day, and they were talking about spiritual gifts, as they called them. And if you could have any gift, what would it be? And one of my friends said, I want to raise the dead. And I remember thinking, whoa, that's pretty big. I wouldn't mind being able to do that. And as I thought that, I saw myself in my mind in surgical scrubs and a white coat in the ER where I'd worked for 25 years. And I saw myself with defibrillator paddles in my hands, putting them on a patient's chest and defibrillating them and restoring their circulation. And when that faded, I saw myself in a different color scrubs in a different room doing the same thing. And in rapid succession, I saw it over and over and over again during my 25-year career, all these people. And when the experience finished, when it closed, I looked at my friend and I said, I've been raising the dead for years, and I just called it something else. Sometimes we just don't see the miracles that are right in front of us, like a child being born.
So true. Yeah, what a great way to put it. And one thing in the book is Solace, whose daughter, as you mentioned, passed away. He is actually able to witness, this is part of the book where I just sobbed, where he actually is able to witness his daughter and grandchild after they had passed away, but he's able to see them as a spiritual being. And when he relays that message to his wife, though, his wife almost feels like, well, how come you got to see her and I didn't? What would be your message to those people who maybe they have had a loved one passed away, or maybe they just don't feel like they are spiritually connected or get to witness or see some of these things? What can they do, or what would be your advice to them?
You know, it's very difficult, because I have had a lot of people ask me that very question, because I do see people frequently. I see loved ones. I see sometimes strangers. I have had experiences in the ER, sometimes at funerals. And sometimes I'm reluctant to share for that very reason, because occasionally when I share, somebody will, they'll be a bit resentful or angry, and they'll say, why do you get to see it? Why don't I get to see it? And my answer is, I don't know. I don't know why I see it and other people don't. And I do think that when we're more open and more willing, then we're more likely to have an experience. And I think it's very, very important to remember that seeing doesn't necessarily supersede other ways of knowing. Our means of communicating in the physical are a large measure what we see and what we hear. Spirit tends to lean, in my experience, much more on what you feel and what you know, even if you can't explain how you know it. So I had a client come to me once. Her son had passed away. She said, I asked her, I said, have you had any experiences with your son since he passed? And she goes, well, I don't see things like that. I just don't have those experiences. I said, okay, well, have you had any experience with your son since he passed? And she goes, well, I don't hear things. I don't hear voices. I just don't have those experiences. I said, okay. I said, have you felt your son's presence since he died? She goes, oh, yes. I said, is he okay? Yes, yes, he's in a good place. I know he's fine. I said, did you feel his love? She goes, oh, yes, it was beautiful. That's how I knew it was him. I felt his love. I felt him. And I asked her a few more questions and got similar answers. And then I said to her, next time you talk about your son, try using words like this. My son loved me so much, he made his presence known to me, and he communicated his love for me and let me know that he was okay. And when she heard it in words, she goes, she was just in tears. She was stunned. It was an accurate representation of what she'd experienced, but she was so focused on what she was going to see and what she was going to hear that she didn't realize she had received the message very clearly, just not in the words she was expecting.
Yeah, so true. And in the book, Solas, the main character, talks about where, you know, some patients he'll experience this light with, and some people he'll experience that, and then others he doesn't. And it's this perplexing, like, you know, well, why do I see it in some and not others? But then really it came to me, and I'm sure you mentioned it in the book, is the light, it's always there. We just may not always see it. And for whatever reason, we get to see it, you know, more, experience it more. Some people see things more than others, but it's there. It's always there. And one of the quotes says, sometimes you can't get proof, he said. You can't always wait until you know. You have to act on what you believe and let things unfold. And then it goes on to say, our biggest breakthroughs require a step into our deepest fears. Our path only opens when we step into the unknown. That's your first step. I really liked that passage as well.
Yeah, that was inspired a little bit by an experience recorded in the Torah of the Israelites when they're carrying the Ark of the Covenant to the River Jordan in anticipation of entering the Promised Land. And they were told, you got to put your foot in the water before the waters will part. Then they had the faith to walk forward and to walk into the water. And sometimes that's scary, but it's a good lesson for all of us.
Absolutely. And yeah, I don't know that I was really planning on bringing this up much, but for some reason I feel like bringing it up. So you're someone who I so appreciate that I can turn to when I have questions in my own faith and religion, when maybe something doesn't quite, you know, a policy or something doesn't quite jive with what I'm feeling or, you know, with my worth. What would you say? I mean, because there's all different religions out there, and I'm not trying to just pinpoint one religion, but I think oftentimes in religion, people feel a fear that they're not good enough, or they haven't jumped through the hoops appropriately enough to gain God's love or worthiness. And I always appreciate when I reach out to you that you just make me feel that worth, regardless of what else is going on. Maybe just if you'll delve into that a little bit, anyone else who might be struggling like I do sometimes in my own religion and feeling like I'm aligning with some of the teachings of certain cultural aspects.
I have studied quite a bit on other faith traditions. I've studied a little bit about Buddhism and Confucianism and Eastern traditions. I've studied the Bhagavad Gita of the Hindus, and I learned Hebrew to study the Torah because I have Jewish ancestry in my blood. I've read the Christian Bible and the Book of Mormon, and but when I read these things and I study them, I don't see how we're different from others. I see how we're the same. That's just innately how I see it when I read these kind of things. And I feel bad that religion spends so much time telling people what they're not, telling them that they're not good enough, that they're not enough. And from my perspective, I view every human soul as a divine being of infinite worth. And you don't have to do something to become that. That's what you are innately. And when you understand your innate authenticity and power and completeness and divinity, then you are secure to venture out and explore and try things. And you might do something that has a consequence you don't like, and you might say, I'm not going to do that again because I don't like the consequence. But it didn't change who I am. It didn't make me less. And conversely, if you go out and do something that has a great consequence and you're really happy with it, you can be happy with it. You can perpetuate that in your life and become that more and more. But it doesn't make you more. It doesn't make you better. And one of the reasons this is so important, in my opinion, to understand is because once you understand that principle, then you can look at other people around you and stop judging them as being more or less based on their actions. And you can accept them for what they are innately and understand that everybody does things for various reasons. And we don't always understand the reasons, and we don't have to judge those reasons or those actions for that matter.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's this difference between culture and then the actual truths and the gospel of Jesus Christ. And oftentimes those get intermingled to where, you know, sometimes the culture, I think, becomes, oh, if you're not doing this, this, and this, which is more culture versus actual gospel truth, I see those get intermingled a lot. So I appreciate people like you who are able to decipher those and unblur those lines. And I feel like that's what your books do. The ones I've read anyway, both Not Yet and Zen's Garden, is it just gets right to the heart of humanity, right to that eternal truth of who we really are. Another quote that I really enjoyed in this was, when Solas goes to get a tattoo, or it's a henna tattoo, but he says, N-O-W, now, he said, nodding, tapping his wrist once for each letter. It's always now, no matter what time it is. I can't remember the past, or I can remember the past with fondness and look to the future with anticipation, but I can only experience in the present, in the now. I want to remember that. That was really profound.
You know, you mentioned Christ, and Christ is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Most people would acknowledge Christ as the model of humility, and yet he knew exactly who he was. He knew his divine nature, and he didn't hesitate to proclaim it. But that didn't make him proud. That made him humble, because he not only recognized his own divine nature, but he recognized the divine nature of others. And so when he talks about being a son of God, and the people literally want to kill him for making that statement, it's blasphemous, and they literally want to stone him to death. He said, no, wait a minute. Isn't it written in your law that I have said you are gods? And he wasn't quoting some new, soon-to-be Christian scripture. He was quoting the 82nd Psalm, which they accepted as truth. And he's telling them, you are gods. And then, as we mentioned earlier, he talks about being the light of the world, and he tells his listeners on the Mount, a Sermon on the Mount, you are the light of the world. He's bringing them into the circle and telling them what they are. And when he comes walking on the water, he doesn't say to Peter, look how great I am, Peter, I'm walking on water. He says, Peter, come walk on the water with me. And Peter does it. And near the end of his ministry, after performing all those miracles, he tells his disciples, greater things than these shall you do. He's always reaching out and bringing people toward him and telling them, you are divine. You have the power. He didn't come to show us his greatness. He came to show us ours. And his ministry was all about that his entire life, in my opinion.
Wow, what a great way to put that. Christ didn't come to the earth to show us his greatness. He came to the earth to show us ours. That's amazing. I love that. We've got just less than a minute. Dr. Jeff O'Driscoll, I cannot thank you enough for coming on. And everybody, please go read his books, Zen's Garden, Not Yet. I know you have other books as well, which I'm sure are equally as amazing. Just closing thoughts, and where can people follow you?
I'm on Facebook. I have a website, jeffodriscoll.com. I'm on Instagram. You can find me in any of those places. And I'm just delighted to have been with you today, Michelle, and to talk a little bit about my daughter, Rachel. I miss her so much. I don't have any qualms about where she is or how happy she is, but I sure miss her.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing. And we love Rachel as well. And thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next time.
Thanks for being a part of the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. And always remember to keep exposing truth.
But I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
This has been a production from a podcast studio.